September 3rd, 1775. In lonely times and late at night, I oft do think of me old life. Distant it is, and distant it seems. After closing at the White Lion, I saunter down among the hog boats drawn up on the strand. Gentle was the sea as a purrin pussycat. It lapped me feet, grating gently down the flints and chalk, and gently back again. 'Twas foggy, as I was thick of head from the cheerful ale. Next ere I knew, I was back and along the broad-backed Hudson on a night of river fog. More than once I rode that 8 mile to Catskill town to mix it up with the village wits and gain their opinions on such matters as the harvest or the revolt. Their opinions were of no account, but the beer was always welcome. And trotting back, half a slumber, toward the little hayseed village, alone or with the company of Nick Vedder and Derek von Brummel, we would belch and let wind, curse our horses, curse our wives, our crops, and our children. So me mind strayed back to all those fading times, and on the great site of our local wall of mountains rising above the river plain into the moonlight, looking like pure mystery. On still nights you could hear the water moving boulders up in Catterkill Clove. Then we'd plod into our sleepy village. Always did I like Palinville best when it was asleep. You could almost see the dreams, like great bubbles, rising over the houses. I'd unhitch me mare, give her extra oats, and try to slide for bed, undetected. But always did I pay for me pleasures on the morrow. October 5th, 1775. This David is a marvel with a hog boat. He can fill sail with less wind than makes a talk. Poised tween tiller and sheet I see him, eyes squintin' out in the glare, pickin' out a breeze where there's none about. There's not a map aboard, but this man knows where best to fish for whiting in the moon's third quarter, where to find the dabs and place in the chopped seas, where to take our fill of mackerel or the conger eels. There's much more to this than fishing in the Catterskill. I'm learning how best to work a jib, and e'en a turn at the helm can I manage, right decent. But most I marvel the ease with which this David fishes. I ne'er tire of watching, and patient too, thank God, with me 10 thumbs. And the warmest of days we strip to the sun. When roasted sufficient, we jump to the sea, and crawl back to dry in the wind and warm. More like a brother is David to me than any brother I e'er had. October 15th, 1775. These English rambles I do like. In late afternoon, as the birds get into song, Anne, David, and I will walk out of town and take to the wind and sky, all manner of plants and animals, and maybe a sunset. As David knows fish, this sweet Annie is a walkin' nature text. I am all stutters and gulps before they're wide known. There were those back in Palinville, including mother, who knew the names most common and passed them on. I knew the birch and hemlock and the pines of Catterskill, the sugar maple, silver beech, the nut trees, and the oaks. Several dozen of flowers and birds were friends, and I had names for them. But to my amazing, Anne has a name and knows somewhat the habit of most all we see and hear. Now e'en she is puzzled occasionally, and she makes note and writes off to one of her nature correspondents. She learns her natural history by chirp and by bloom. Some wings and calls I seen and heard before, goldfinches I know, and swallers, white throats and common sparrows. These seem much like their Yankee cousins, but the cuckoo I know not. A big hawky bird flapping about the pond at Rotten Dean. Anne tells me this big cuckoo, too lazy to hatch her own, lays her eggs in another's nest. Crossing Whitehawk Hill and Downland Spur, we spied many a gull, swarms of swallers, and the sparrowhawk hovering patiently for its kill. Blackberries we ate, sweetening the mouth as well as the eye. Primrose, daisies, and asters flower the sheepy downtops, and o'er all was washed the smell of sea-freshed air. My fill I'd had of berries and names, but we retreated to the King of Prussia and had our pints of coolin' ale. November 5th, 1775. Nary a serious nor independent thought had I till I was 26 or 7. I question not the patchwork pieces laid out and stitched into me life like it was so much quiltin'. No need to read nor use your noggin, was there, Rippy? Especially not for farmin'. Nobody in your clan e'er did much readin', nor gave heed to no serious thought, nor knew one if they did hear it. But, Rippy, life's not the same since you've been putting your head to things. Think of Anne there, the most calculatin' woman alive. She's got thoughts and opinions stored up on more things than I e'er heard of before. 'Tis she I got to thank for getting me close-hauled and turned to the wind. I'd not be about this journal writing were it not for her. Thanks to Annie, I live in two worlds, and ne'er could I go back to just be an old sleepy Rip again. Nowadays, I can recall all what's happened, and I look forward to the morrow. November 7th, 1775. James and Gilbert showed me the poster of the King's Proclamation, regarding traitors and conspirators in the rebellion. We all laughed o'er that, wondering how the rebellion was faring. I asked me pals if they thought I was a spy. They clapped me on the back, saying they figured even General Washington could find a brighter spy than I would make. We laughed it off, but later I gave a bit of thought to it, wondering if the locals might have their suspicions about me. Thanks for the compliment, ye bastards, I shouted to the wind. I copied out the poster to think on it some more. It said, King's Proclamation regarding traitors and conspirators in the rebellion in North America. All our subjects of this realm and the dominions thereunto belonging are reminded they are bound by law to be aiding and assisting in the disclosure and making known all traitorous conspiracies and attempts against us, our crown and dignity. God save the king. It be not so good to warm the crown round these parts, but it be worse to cheer the colonials. My meaning is, it be natural as the sun doth rise to oath and curse the king, but I must watch me mouth on the war. There be Sussex lads getting killed over there now, nor be I sure just how I feel on the subject neither. I read, and just recent, in the Sussex Advertiser that the colonials marched right up to Canada and took Montreal. Stretched their luck a turn too far, and Quebec, they got repulsed there. This revolt could go either side, and I know not which is to be the best. November 13th, 1775. Aunt Mary is a fine old biscuit, and I do like her much. A cheery woman, she is, and makes me feel right to home with her quick offers of, won't you have some tea with us, and I'll just put the kettle to boil. And me scones is fresh baked. For the scones, she is most rightly famous. Well, who can refuse such warmth and the cheer? And so we sit and sip our milk tea, and sometimes our rounder a sherry, and we talk down the clock hands on all manner of things. What made it us right good friends from the start is our liking for the well-told tale and for its teller. She is plenty good at catching you full of the local tattle, if and you wish that for a diet, but no malicious gossip is she. Oh, much would she rather hear a good amusing tale, such as how I fell asleep on horseback and had a rude awakening, or how Duncan Brown tripped into the pigsty while chasing his Sunday bacon about the trough. So we spend good hours together in our mutual amusing over life as 'tid needed and shaped by the teller of the tale. 'Tis a right good feeling, too, when Mary has a slack in her day and no bustle or hustle about the inn. 'Tis like sitting on a hilltop and looking down on the world from on high. November 13th, 1775. Anne showed me the letters from Generals Lee and Burgoyne that's in the Lewis papers today. General Lee in Philadelphia, he says the king and his court are corrupt, and if they prevail, that bright goddess Liberty must fly off the face of the earth and leave not a trace behind. Now General Burgoyne, newly arrived in Boston, they got his reply down too. He says, I know Great Britain is ready to open her arms upon the first overture of accommodation. Don't rightly know what he means there, but I smell the breath of the oily rat. Lee refuses to meet or speak with him, and he will join forces with the rebels. Glad am I to be so many miles away from that great fracas. Makes me sleepy even to wonder which side would I be on. Got me own battles here, just trying to stay awake. November 25th, 1776. Why do I sleep so much? And shall I ever be fully awake? Fits of drowsiness beset me. I sleep me great sleeps, as I do call them, some 30 to 50 hours a time. Now how am I to stay awake? Is it the moon's dark time that fecks me so? Hibernations I have known. The Catskill bear, me cousin and bedfellow. I feel a great sleep coming on, and there is no stopping me. In such a state I sleep most anywhere. You may find me curled up in the hold of a hogboat with a mess of mackerel for sleepmates. Yes, that I do afore. Fall asleep on horseback, and that more oft than I wish to recall. David and Anne, they be right used to this sleepy strangeness by now, and have much sport of me. Where you going, Rip? To bed already? The shadow is not crossed too, and there is much to do, but off I pack myself to bed on such days. Now is back then this great laziness. It comes unpredictable as a storm, but less oft now, methinks. In the old days, I'd get this way when Greta would start ragging and gumming me down about the corn harvesting and the fence mending, and how that woman could make a man shrink to sleep. But 'twas the dram that changed all that. Remember the antique Dutchman decked in silver buckles and puff pants? One dram from that little keg, and I woke to another world. No desire nor courage to go back. That sleep, it set deep in me bones and flesh, so deep the Mohawks labored long with their smoke and salts to rouse me. And now there is residue of that sleeping dram lodged in me veins. On days such as this, I feel it flowing through me. For the Mohawks, they wake me long before I had time to sleep it out of me. Today I should be the Princess Snorin, and I'm too tired to sleep. The only fit topic for me mind and pen is sleep itself. I keep myself near awake, writing about what I would be doing instead. Fog shrouds me little world. Tiny and like a child I feel. How big and busy I tell myself I should be, but I have not the will for it. My mind is all a mush. You could eat it warm for breakfast, and it would pass unnoticed for porridge. Strain it, and you'd find not a particle of thought big enough to clog the sieve. December 15th, 1775. Sitting here at my desk by the window, high up in the eaves and roof beams, great black beams cross each other and rise to a peak, or me bed, makes a lad feel cozy and secure with all these timbers holding his roof up against this storm. Me little window panes are streaked with spray that raises from those big waves crashing on the battlements. Ne'er before did I see storms like they get here. Open me window out some and I hear the great explosions like all the battery cannons going off at once. Oh, this sea is angry, and glad am I to stay within. Of course, I recall big thunderstorms coming down out of the Catskills, too. We used to say Manitou would be angry, but that was Indian kind of talk about the mountain spirits. Still, did it seem like somebody was powerful angry and out to flood our little town right down the Hudson. More than once I sat there in the barn, listening to the Caterkill rise, hoping she'd rise out of her banks and bear the place away. 'Twas no peace there, even in a stormy spell. Greta had her lists.
Good day for mending the harness and the wagon wheels. What's out around? Hen house needs shoveling. Privy needs warming. Ashes need hauling.
Then she'd come shrieking round, waking me out of a pleasant straw dream to make the day a bust. I had no choice but to sneak off, sloping down the road to town. Many the stormy day and fair did I spend at Nick Vedder's King George Inn, drinking down the pints with Derek Van Wessels and Joachim Hosen. A goodly drinking crew we were. with sagely wit and measured thought on most any manner or topic. Many a time we were so engaged, when I get the quick word Greta was on the wing and her talons were showing. Through the kitchen and pantries I'd tear, not wishing that woman to find me where the ale is on my breath and in such idle company. More than once I stood on the bridge of that storm-swollen caterkill, praying it would flood me farm out once for good. "She's yours and welcome to her," I remember yelling once in the wind. "Take her all, hens, wife, and privy. I've done with them all." 'Tis so nice to sit here cozy in the storm, remembering some the days gone by. Things I had forgot come leaping to the page as me quill scratches them down. 'Tis not a bad writing about Greta in the old shrieking and hiding days, knowing she's far enough off to give me ease. December 26th, 1775. 'Tis a fine festive time, and I'm made to feel at home right in the midst of it. Boxing Day today, and we have handed out gifts to all the gals that works for the Lion and to the tradesfolk what delivers to us regular. I took charge of making the punch bowl, though I admired me own handiwork somewhat in excess. The Sheldons and the Finches joined us for Christmas dinner yesterday, making it a nice round party of nine. Anne and Aunt Mary worked much of the morn and some of the day before on decorations for each place. Last week I built a little manger for the baby Jesus and then carved sheep and wise men to go with. The Christmas table was a splendor like I ne'er seed before, with fine linens and silver, painted plates and tall crystal glasses for the claret. Plopped down in the center and looking most too good to eat was a roast beef, its ribs standing up and scooted round to make a crown. I ate and drank more than my fill. After the flamin' puddin' came in, I felt so happy the tears came to me eyes. Seeing the tears roll down me cheek, Annie asked if Christmas made me sad. I told her they were tears of happiness to be with her family. And truth, I was also thinking, 'tis the first Christmas I remember without that woman wrinkling up her face and shaking her jowls and shaking about and shrieking about how I had ruined the bird and ruined her Christmas and ruined her life besides. Filled with the fullness of that fine roast and flamin' puddin', and now the French brandy, I got to thinking some thoughts on the goodness of things as fortune's wheel has turned round so nicely for me. And these are me Christmas observations. 1. A journal well kept is a goodly pleasure. 2. There is great virtue in idleness. 3. If a thing gives pleasure, and it do no harm, why then do it straightway, and worry not the consequences till the morrow. 4. All the world is divided twixt the sleepers and the wakers. To the former I belong, though to the latter I aspire. So struggle, Rip, to stay awake.